Have you ever had this experience where you're reading something or you're having a conversation with someone and they say something and the words just jump off the page and they illuminate something that you've been struggling with? It's like the light bulb goes on. And you went, wow, it all makes sense now. I finally understand whatever you've been wrestling with. This past summer, no one's had that experience? It might be lonely today then, because if I'm the only one who's had that experience. This past summer, I was excited for vacation, like I think most of us are if we get time off. And we'd planned it out, and I was looking forward to having rest. And I got some physical rest. But through the summer and through that process and even afterwards, there was something that was just eating at me. And I couldn't quite put my finger on it. Although when I was talking to someone about it, I explained it this way. There's this scene in Lord of the Rings where Bilbo Baggins is talking to Frodo. And he's talking about kind of his old age. And he uses this imagery, and I'm not going to quote it precisely. But he basically says, I feel like I'm just a small little bit of butter that is stretched over a dry piece of toast. And as I thought about that and as I said it, you know what? I felt this summer that I was just kind of stretched thin. And it really had nothing to do with my physical being, because I got lots of rest. But I still felt stretched thin. But I couldn't really explain why or how or what the issue was necessarily until a little while ago, a few days ago, I came across these verses. And I want to share them with you this morning. They're found in 3 John. And if it's been a while since you've been in 3 John, it's the third book from the end of the Bible. There's only one chapter. And I just want to read the first 4 verses to you. The elder to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well. It gave me great joy when some believers came and testified about your faithfulness to the truth, telling how you continue to walk in it. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Did the light bulbs go off for you guys? You're going, okay, Brent, great. Doesn't seem that profound, though. So what was your experience? I'll draw you to verse 2. And if we look at verse 2, there's 3 things in that verse that most of us would look at. And I think the first one in the prayer that he offers is, I pray that you may enjoy good health. Like, who doesn't want that prayed over them, right? And for those of you who know my journey over this past year, you would expect me probably to focus on that, but that wasn't what stood out to me. What about that it may go well with you? That's an awesome prayer as well. Like, who doesn't want to get prayed over to say, hey, that you would succeed in life, that work would turn out great, that family would turn out great, that everything would just come up roses? Like, who doesn't want that prayer? But that's not what stood out to me. It was the next phrase. Even as your soul is getting along well. When I read those words, the light bulb came on. The light bulb came on. And I realized that my feelings of feeling thin had to do with the fact that I had an issue with my soul. The word soul is interesting. How many of you guys have thought of the word soul recently? Like, how many of you, if I came along and asked, so what is your soul? What would you tell me? What would be your definition? How would you describe to me what your soul is? I mean, it's interesting because I don't think we really talk about our soul all that much, but the word soul just pervades our language. There's so many phrases, there's so many things that we talk about that actually have the word soul in it, and we don't even realize it. I mean, the distress signal that we use, SOS, what is that? Save our soul. Or souls, if there's more than one of you that needs saving. Right? Or maybe you've heard this phrase, the eyes are the window into your soul. Or when someone does something terrible, a question we might ask them is, do you have no soul? And all those phrases give us a little hint of what we think soul should be about. I mean, when we're talking about looking into the eyes as the windows of our soul, we are explaining and thinking that there is some depth to the soul. There is something that you have to look into and see deep down inside that you can't just see on the surface. When we say, have you no soul, we're implying that our soul has something to do with our actions. Something that should guide us in how we behave and act. Over 100 years ago, a doctor was doing some experiments. And one of his experiments included weighing people at the moment of their death. And he did this with 7 TB patients. And he found that when at the moment of their death, they actually decreased in weight. And he was able to measure it, and it was 21 grams. And so he put out this hypothesis that our soul weighs 21 grams. In fact, a movie came out not too long ago with Sean Penn in it with the same title, kind of that idea. Our soul, there is something tangible about our soul, even if we can't put our finger on it. Now, as far as I know, that doctor's findings have never been able to be repeated since then, but it gives us a pause to think through that, doesn't it? Our world talks about our soul. Maybe you were taught this prayer as a kid. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Like, who teaches their kids that prayer? Really? Like, 4-year-old kid, I'm going to teach you a prayer about death. Like, go to sleep now. Like, we really need to rethink that. But how many of you have heard that prayer? I mean, most of us have probably heard that prayer, right? The idea of a soul is embedded in our culture, in our society, in our world. And yet, here's the thing. Most of us probably could not explain what it is. Let me help you with a definition, and it comes from Dallas Willard, a guy who's a great deep thinker, and probably some would describe him as having a deep soul, a deep-souled person. When talking about the soul, this is what he suggested. That the soul consists of concentric circles. In the innermost circle is a person's will. This is the place where you have your intentions. This is the place where you make your choices. The next circle on the concentric circles is your mind. This is the place where you have your thoughts, where your feelings are expressed, your values, your consciousness. Then the third circle is your body. Your physical body, your body language, your actions. It's where your choices and your values and your feelings often get played out. And then surrounding them all in the outer circle, with every one of those circles on the inside, is your soul. Your soul encompasses both your will, your mind, and your heart. Dallas Willard, in talking about our soul this way, suggests that when a soul is healthy, all three of those other circles are in harmony. But not only are they in harmony with one another, they are actually in harmony with God. And they are in harmony with how God has designed us and created us. The problem comes is when one of those circles is in misalignment. And all of a sudden, we have an unhealthy soul. And so when we let our feelings override our choices, when we let our body override our mind, when the will does not control some of those other aspects of our life, Dallas Willard would suggest that our soul is not in the place of health that it should be. Where do you think he gets this from? Here's where you say the Sunday school answer. Jesus, right? Let's turn to Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12, verse 30 says this. Jesus in context, he's asked a question. Some of you have heard this question. Jesus, what's the most important commandment? What does Jesus say? Love the Lord your God with all your what? Heart, all your soul, all your mind, with all your strength. Look at that. So when Jesus says, love him with all your heart, what is he talking about there? He is talking about your will, the place where you make all your decisions, where you make the choices for your life. When he says, with all your mind, what is he talking about? That's the place where you have your feelings, your thoughts, your values, your consciousness. And what about all your strength? That's your body. In every action that your body does, you are to love the Lord your God, and then he wraps it all up with saying, and your soul, right? So it seems that Jesus articulates that our will, our heart, our mind, our strength is all connected with our soul as well. The word psychology comes from a Greek word, psyche. Do you know what the Greek word psyche means? Soul. So the very study of ourselves, psychology, originally meant the study of the soul. Let me quote Sigmund Freud for you. Treatment of the psyche means treatment of the soul. One could also understand it to mean treatment of sickness when it occurs in the life of the soul. You see, the whole foundation of our modern day psychology was built on the understanding that they are trying to look at our soul. But that has shifted so radically in our culture today. So much so that psychology now doesn't focus on the soul, it just focuses on the self. John Ortberg, in his book Soul Keeper, he's a pastor and author, but also has a degree in clinical psychology, says this, that when you focus on yourself, you will never fix your soul. You see, our culture tells us that it is important to focus on the self. Be individualistic. Focus on just you. The problem is that God has designed our soul for something bigger than that. When Jesus comes and is asked the question, he doesn't say, and love yourself with all your mind, all your heart, and all your strength, and all your soul. He says what? Love God. And Jesus gives us the indication that our soul will never be healthy if God isn't at the center of it. And so if we just focus on ourselves and we don't have an outward look at God, we will never get better. That's what Jesus is saying. Your soul needs to be centered on God. John Ortberg would go on to say later on in his book, ironically, the more obsessed we are with ourselves, the more we neglect our souls. And here is where Jesus jumps in with his second commandment, is we are to love what? Our neighbors as ourselves. And the idea with these two commandments is that we are to take our eyes off ourselves and we are to put them on God, and then we are to put them on those people that God has surrounded us with. You see, if we want to have a healthy soul, if we want to take care of our soul, one of the first steps to do that is we have to take our eyes off ourselves. We have to put our eyes on God. We have to take and put our eyes on others. Because our soul needs to be centered on God. Because that's how we've been created. This summer, while I was going through kind of this phase, this thinness that I was feeling, I couldn't explain why I was going through it, why I was feeling this way, but I did know one thing I probably needed to do. And so this on my vacation, I decided I'm going to do all my devotional time and it's just going to be focused on worship. So I got YouVersion and I downloaded a whole bunch of worship reading plans and I just worked through them on my time off. Here's the interesting thing. Even though I couldn't articulate the problem, the Holy Spirit showed me the solution. And maybe that's you this morning. You couldn't put your finger on whatever's troubling you in your life, but God has been speaking to you about certain things that you need to deal with or certain things you need to be focused on or trying to draw your attention back to Him. And so my question is, are you being obedient to what God is speaking to you about? Or maybe this morning God is opening and turning that light on and letting you know that the problem you're having is that your soul isn't healthy right now. You're stretched so thin. Or maybe there's something that's gotten in the way of a healthy soul. You see, no matter how well your soul is doing now, sooner or later in your life, your world will fall apart. It's because we're human. That's what happens to us. And when it falls apart, how we survive it is dependent on how healthy our soul is. Matthew 16:26 has this verse, and Jesus is talking to his disciple. Maybe you've heard it before. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world and yet what? Forfeit their soul. Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? When I read this verse, I often have in my mind that Jesus is talking about eternity. Because that's part of what our soul does. Our soul reminds us that we are more than just reality right now. There is an eternity that follows. We have been created for eternity, and our soul reminds us the importance of that. But I'm not sure that this verse is totally talking about that. You see, in context, this verse in Matthew 16 comes right after Jesus tells his disciples, if you want to follow me, what do you got to do? You got to deny yourself. And it's in the context of discipleship. And so if we read that verse again with that context, what good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? As Dallas Willard would say, maybe Jesus is not talking about a destination here. Instead, he's talking about the journey. The Bible tells us that God is the overseer of our souls. See, God is worried about your soul. God wants you to understand how important your soul is to you. In fact, Peter tells us one of the things that stops us from being healthy in our soul is in 1 Peter 2, verse 11, dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles, and with that language, he's reminding us that as Jesus followers, as Christians, our home is not really here, it's in heaven, to abstain from sinful desires which what? Wage war on our soul. Peter's reminding us that one of the things that stops us from having a healthy soul is sin. Because you know what happens? Sin creates a disconnect in us from God. It creates a barrier between us and God. And so when there is sin in our life and we allow it to run or control us, we are separated from God. Maybe you've heard this expression, confession is good for the soul. Where do you think that comes from? It comes from the idea that sin is not great for our soul. Our soul is actually healed by confession. Sin, in essence, splits our soul into tiny pieces. And when sin is ruling our lives, what it makes us do is pretend that everything is okay because we have to hide so much that is going on. If you don't believe me, our culture even believes this. Just think of the great literary work, Harry Potter. For those of you who haven't read it, want to read it, you might want to plug your ears. I'm going to give away one of the big plot things. In that series of books, the evil villain, Voldemort, has to be killed, but they have to keep killing him. And why? What happens in it? you find out that Voldemort has split his soul into 7 pieces. And in order to finally vanquish him, they must kill each Horcrux. And in order for Voldemort to get to that place, each time he split himself, he had basically had to murder someone. So this whole idea that sin splits our soul is even picked up in literature that our culture reads. Sin creates a disconnect between us and God. And if there is sin in your life this morning, unconfessed sin, it is splitting your soul. And you will not have a healthy soul. You can't, because you are disconnected from God. Maybe you've heard this expression. If the devil can't make you sin, he will make you what? Busy. Heard that one? Here's the reality that I think most of us don't pay a whole lot of attention to. Our busyness actually is a huge factor in making us soul sick. You see, a busy person usually becomes a cluttered soul. There are so many things going on in our life, so many things that we have to pay attention to, that we never have time to pay attention to our soul. There's so much going on. And so whether it's sin or busyness, we stop being centered on God. And here's the thing. I think most of you here this morning, if I were to ask you this question, are you devoted to God? Have you made God the center of your life? Most of you would, I think, say yes. I think so. But here's the fallacy that sometimes Christians even fall into. We don't even know what our soul is devoted to. We think it's God, but we've tricked ourselves when it's actually devoted to something else. John Ortberg, in his book, asks a number of questions, which I thought I would read this morning. He says, consider as honestly as possible the following statements. If any of them even slightly resemble your thoughts, it might be quite possible that you have discovered the true devotion of your soul, which is not God. So listen. Maybe you've thought this. I think about money a lot, as in getting more of it. Sometimes I fantasize about winning the lottery or coming into a big inheritance. I have a mental wish list of the things I'd like to buy if money were no object. Or I wish I had more power and control over others. It seems as if my spouse and kids just don't respect me enough. Ditto at work. I know I would handle it carefully. I would just like to be a more powerful person. Or maybe I have missed important family events in order to pursue my career. I have justified it by telling myself and my family that this is what it takes to provide for them. I tell myself that if I keep working hard, one day I will reach a level where I will be able to relax a little and spend more time with the people I love. Or maybe it's, I consider myself an honest person, someone with good values. But I would set those values aside to pursue something important to me if I knew no one else would know about it. Or I have desires that I prefer not to have my spouse know about. If I'm confronted with any of those desires, I become defensive and try and justify it. Or I have secrets that I'm willing to lie to protect. Or maybe more than once I have had arguments over something I wanted to do, but my spouse did not want to do it. Or over something I wanted to buy that my spouse didn't think I should buy. Or aside from my family and the others I love, there are things in my life that if they were lost or destroyed, it would crush me, devastate me. Or if my doctor told me I had to give up alcohol or cigarettes or red meat or salt or sugar or caffeine or wheat, no, he doesn't have wheat here, that'd be me, because it was seriously putting my health at risk, I would find it difficult to the point of being impossible. I would likely would not tell anyone about it in order to avoid accountability. Or if you ask my family what was most important to me, they would likely refer to my job, my favorite hobby, making money. They would probably not say it was them. Or I love God and I want to more closely follow him. But there is one thing that always seems to get in the way, and it's fill in the blank. If your soul is devoted to something that becomes more important to you than God, it is your idol. And you will have an unhealthy soul. Nothing reminds us of the importance of a soul more than a funeral. Yesterday, I was asked to officiate Judy Best's celebration of life. And one of the things that I always, not always struggle with, but you have to give some thought is what do you say when you stand up in front of people who are grieving, a family, friends, someone who've lost someone special to them? How do you come in and talk to them about that? And Judy had this very, this image of God that she loved to talk about. And it was this image and understanding that God is our shepherd. And so, of course, I used a very familiar passage that talks about that, Psalm 23. Let me just read the first couple verses of Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Last night, as I was working on this message, these verses wouldn't leave my head. And no wonder. I mean, it talks about God refreshing our soul. And I was talking about soul care this morning. How do we care for our soul? And when we realize that when we make God the center of our soul, when we center our attention on him, one of the things he does is he comes along and refreshes us. And that's awesome. But did you get the part earlier in the verse? What does it say? He suggests that I lie down in green pastures. He says he makes me lie down. Do you know what that means? That means that there are going to be times in your life when you need rest, when you need to be centered on God and you're not doing it, and God's going to come along and go, kablow, here you are, pushing you down onto the green grass, baby. I'm going to make you rest. Here's the thing. None of us like that moment. None of us like it when God comes along and makes us lie down in green pastures, no matter how bad we need it. But because God cares for us and loves us so much, he does it. Because he knows one thing. Your soul needs rest. If you are to have a healthy soul, the only way you can do that is by getting some rest. And if you think I'm overstating it or maybe overblowing it, think about this. Why did God create Sabbath? You know, he created the world in 6 days, did everything, and then the Bible tells us he rested on the seventh. Was it because God is tired? No. I think in part because God wanted to demonstrate to us and remind us how important rest is for our souls. So much so that he asks us to take a Sabbath every week. That means 1 out of 7 days our souls are supposed to rest. We are actually supposed to structure it in our busy schedule. Take a rest. And what happened to the nation of Israel? They ignored that. And God came along and did what? He made them rest. He made them rest. And it was painful for the nation of Israel. Your soul needs rest in order to be a healthy soul. It really does. Maybe you've heard this story, and it comes out of Africa. The story is told of someone who went to Africa and had to travel inland, a fairly great distance. So they hired a guide. They hired some porters to carry all the bags and the luggage. And they were quite intent and keen on getting to their destination as quickly as possible. So the first day they set out and they made great time. The person was really happy. They were excited. Hey, they were calculating how much more time it would take them to finally get to their destination. And so the second day, morning comes up. They get up, ready to go. They're out there, ready to go. And they look around and all the porters are just sitting on the ground, relaxing. And the person's confused. Going, okay, what's going on here? Why aren't they ready to go? We got places to be, places to go. And so they go over to the guide, and the guide then tells them this. Well, we traveled so far yesterday that the porters need to wait for their souls to catch up to them today. Let me ask you, can you even see your soul in your rearview mirror? Are you so busy in life that you haven't taken a rest for so long that you can't even see your soul? It's so far behind you. When was the last time you rested? Maybe for some of you this morning, God is making you lie down. You're hating it. You're not liking it. It's painful. But now you finally understand what God is doing. He's asking you to rest because your soul is unhealthy. And you need to provide for a little soul care. Maybe others of you are here this morning and you are like me this summer. You just feel stretched thin and you weren't sure why. You just knew something was wrong. And now the light has gone on and God has spoken to you this morning. Maybe it's because you have sin in your life that has separated you from God and has caused your soul to be unhealthy and you need to deal with it. You need to confess to God. Maybe you need to confess to someone else that sin and deal with it. Some of you just might be way too busy for your own good. Maybe there's others of you who have something that you have put in the center of your life ahead of God and you didn't even realize you had done it until this morning. And God is challenging you, speaking to you, put me back in the rightful place. For others of you, maybe this morning you come in here and you go, Brent, I don't even know this whole soul thing. This is news to me. How do I get a healthy soul? It starts with Jesus. And for some of you, you just need to come to the place to understand your soul will never be healthy if your will, your mind, and your body are out of alignment. And you will never be able to align all three and have a healthy soul unless you do it with God at the center. And the only way you do that is through Jesus Christ. And so you need to come to the place, and God is speaking to you, calling you, that you need to make him number one in your life. You need to accept that. This week at staff, Paul, our executive pastor, asked this question during our devotional time. He said he had talked about how God had been speaking to him during the week before, and the question that God had told him was this: Paul, what do you need to stop? And maybe that's the question God is asking you this morning. What do you need to stop doing in your life? Something that maybe is getting in the way of you having a healthy soul, something that is getting in the way of you focusing solely on God. What is that thing you need to do? I'm going to ask the worship team to come up. I'm going to ask our prayer teams to go to the back of the auditorium. You see, one of the things we need to do in order to rest is actually create space for it. If we don't intentionally decide to do something about it, we will get out of here, we will say goodbye to our friends, we'll have some coffee, and then we'll go home and we won't even think about it. But before you do that, I want to give you some space. And so we're going to worship. And for some of you, maybe all you need to do to re-energize your soul, to fill it up, is just focus on God in these last minutes that we have. And then worship him with all your being. For others of you, maybe it's something that you need to pray with someone. Maybe it's a confession thing. Maybe it's just something that is God has made you lie down and you need to deal with it and you need someone to pray for you to help you walk through those moments. What is it going to be? Maybe for some of you, you just need to come to God and confess. And so your soul will be filled and it will be healed this morning. Let me pray. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, sometimes I wish preaching would be so much easier if I didn't have to learn lessons. But God, you've been teaching me a lesson over the last couple months. And maybe this message is just for me this morning. And maybe I'm the only one who needs to hear it. So thank you. Lord, help me to stay focused on you. Remind me when my soul is unhealthy, point it out. Lord, when my will and my mind and my body are not in alignment, show me. And give me the strength and to confess. Lord, I know there are a number of people in our church this morning who have dealt with loss over the last few weeks. Family members or friends who have passed away. It's in those moments, Lord, that our grief, you use our grief to allow us to understand whether we are healthy or not with our soul. So, Lord, maybe there are some here this morning who are in grief who just need your loving arms wrapped around them. They may even need someone to pray for them. Lord, part of having a healthy soul is being obedient to what you say to us. And maybe there's some here this morning that you're speaking to that they need to go pray with somebody. I pray that you give them the courage to do that. Lord, I pray that you would give those who are here this morning who are waffling, who know they need to do something, to step out and do something, but are afraid to do that. I pray that you give them the courage to want to take care of their soul this morning. And Lord, as we continue to worship you, my prayer is that everyone who leaves this morning